fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, the host of the Color and Ceramics podcast. Today, I want to share my wonderful conversation with Shay Bishop. Shay grew up in Kentucky in the United States and began working with clay at an early age, later earning his BFA from the Kansas City Art Institute. While still an undergraduate, his practice expanded beyond ceramics to include textiles and the body, laying the foundation for a deeply material-driven and interdisciplinary approach. He has held residencies at Red Star Studios, the Kohler Arts Industry Program, and the Archie Bray Foundation, and has been part of craft communities ranging from the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina to studios and research trips across Europe, Asia, and the Americas. In 2021, he co-founded Treat Studios, a multi-function art space in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. His work is also informed by a lifelong passion for herpetology, a fascination with reptiles and amphibians that subtly and sometimes directly enters his sculptural language. He currently lives in Richmond, Virginia, where he shares a home with his partner, two dogs, and a snake. In this conversation, we talk about material relationships, craft communities, curiosity-driven making, and how long-held passions can quietly shape an artist's voice. I think you'll really enjoy this one. Let's meet Shay. Shay, thanks so much for joining us on the Color and Ceramics podcast. We are really pumped about having you on board in this conversation. So welcome.
Thank you so much, Bob. I'm really excited to be here. It's going to be fun talking with you.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. You know, I followed your work for a number of years, and so it's very cool that you're able to come on the show. And I know you have a bit of a cowboy theme to some of your work. And so up here where we live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, we've got a big cowboy culture here as well, because we do a lot of ranching and that sort of a thing takes place here. So it's going to be a nice connection, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you were telling us just before we started that you're in Virginia, and you've been doing this work for a while. And so, you know, this isn't something that just occurred to you overnight and all of a sudden you were doing this work. I wonder if you could describe your journey in clay a little bit for us, like where you started and what got you to where you're at today.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I started taking classes in clay when I was a little kid. I have been interested in this material for a really long time. And for me, it actually really started because I have had this lifelong interest in reptiles, and as a child, I met this ceramic artist who was making little frogs and lizards that he attached to his ceramic pottery that he made, and I was just fascinated watching him at this craft fair. So I got my parents to ask if he ever taught any lessons, and he ended up taking me on, and I worked with him for many years and learned a lot about clay at an early age. So it wasn't until much later, when I was in art school, studying ceramics and art history at the Kansas City Art Institute in Missouri, that I first started to become interested in merging ceramics and textiles and incorporating the body and making these wearable ceramic and mixed media garments that I have continued to explore up to the present day. So, yeah, my journey with clay has been long, and it's certainly very much involved with many other craft materials and processes. I am a person with a really deep interest in materials and traditions, as well as in the new ways these things are being used. And so when I started making these wearable pieces and putting myself into my work and kind of exploring the starting to explore the visual language of clothing and dress and how that relates to these craft materials and processes and our identity and culture, there's just it's became this really rich and interesting field that I felt I could explore almost infinitely. And so that is what has kept me interested in making the kind of work I do up to today.
It is true, isn't it, that we need to have something that allows us to maneuver and change our interests or have another tweak that we want to explore as we go through. And you're right, boy, your stuff around ceramics and textiles, combining the two, is really unique.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I'm a person who I am very focused, and I can spend a long invest a lot of time in doing detailed repetitive tasks. And so this process of making many small ceramic tiles and lacing them together into these flexible forms and experimenting with different geometries and tessellations and then fitting them to my body. There's so much technical work that goes into it, and so many different possibilities for the ways that I can structure these things. So on one hand, that is just this really rich field for me to engage with. And then, as I mentioned before, all of the things that you can express when you're bringing, all of our history and notions about clothing into the conversation, just, make it even more exciting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is an audio-only podcast, and we will, of course, we'll have links to your website and Instagram and all those kind of things in there. But I bet you some people are listening to this and they haven't got a clue what we're talking about. This guy's doing ceramics and he's making clothes. So could you describe for people in a manner that they could understand if they're just listening to this, the kind of work that you're doing? Because of course I understand it, Zana, and I have seen the work and really have seen it visually, right?
Yeah, certainly. That is a really good point, something that I probably should have mentioned sooner, but my work varies a little bit, but the common thread in most of my practice is creating wearable ceramic and mixed media garments that I tailor to fit my own body, and that I then photograph have myself photographed wearing these pieces in specific environments that help to kind of create a story behind these garments. And then I write about them and display them in this, contextual manner in a gallery so that they're like this kind of artifact of an experience and maybe an alternate history that I have envisioned, and that is conveyed through the ceramic work and the additional materials that I display with them. And so in a nuts and bolts sense, what I usually do is I will begin in much the same way that one would when making textile clothing, where I'll measure my body and create paper templates or patterns to scale. And then I adjust those. Usually you have to scale them up to account for the shrinkage rate of clay as it dries and during firing. And then I will design a layout of tiles, and I hand make usually through press molding or just rolling very thin slabs of porcelain or white stoneware. I'll make usually between 1,000 and several thousand little ceramic tiles that I then drill tiny holes into by hand and glaze and fire. And then I use different fiber materials, usually like some kind of strong braided polyethylene fiber, different types of braided fishing lines and things like that, to lace these thousands of little tiles together to create those flexible tile garments. And then another way that I make wearable ceramics is in this series of cowboy hats that I make. Those are created by a kind of hybrid slip casting and hand building technique, where I'm making very thin, about 1.5 to 2 pound ceramic hats that I glaze with, decorative patterns and motifs that relate to these kind of ideas and conversations about American masculinity and the influence of the kind of cowboy mythos on culture in the past and present. So that's a little bit wordy, but it's kind of a description of the types of things that I make.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a million questions. But one of the questions that I have has to do with your story, because I think that's really central to your work. I mean, we can talk about technique, and I'd love to talk with you about patience, because I think you must have a load of patience to be able to make thousands of little tiles. But tell us about your story, about like what is it that you're trying to get across with that kind of work? You just mentioned sort of the history of masculinity and all that. So tell us more.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been making these ceramic garments for about 14 years now, and so I've kind of explored a few different directions and like sub themes within my work. But when, I guess to take it back to the beginning, when I was first starting my very first ceramic garment, I was thinking of this kind of material metaphor, where I was thinking about clay as representing history, ceramic as something that's heavy, but also fragile, something long lasting but rigid. And I was thinking about textile as representing the personal, being flexible, something that can bend and move and be fitted to our own bodies. And so, in kind of finding my own artistic voice at that time, I thought of combining, merging the ceramic material and textile material as this metaphor for locating myself.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Within history. And so that's something that, you know, has been, that was kind of a conceptual foundation for me and that I've talked about many times over the years. And then within that kind of broad field, there are a number of different things that I have been specifically interested in exploring. For one, I'm really passionate about history. I was an art history double major with ceramics and have always been fascinated by the, you know, all of the ways throughout the past that humans have used these natural materials in incredibly intricate, culturally specific ways, you know, to create the artifacts that are part of what make us human, you know, the way that we use the structure of weaving or basketry as a system of creating pattern and decoration, and the way that, you know, we fashion architecture and clothing around ourselves, which both protects us from the elements and communicates something about our society, about our identity, about our status, things like that. And I am also, as I mentioned before, deeply interested in animals and natural ecosystems and the history of how humans have interacted with the non-human world around us. So those are some of the bigger themes that I've explored. I guess to focus in on my work that involves Western wear and cowboy identity, because that's something that I've been dealing with a lot in the last 5 years. I think the first seeds of my interest in those themes, well, I guess to take it back a little further, I grew up in Kentucky primarily, and you know, my family lived in the city of Louisville, and so I didn't grow up on a farm or anything out in the country, and you know, my sister did horseback riding, but for me, I was more interested when I went to the stable, I would want to run off into the woods and look for snakes. That was, you know, more, more where my passion was. So, you know, I didn't have like a cowboy childhood by any means, but, growing up in the American South, there was always, or really anywhere in America, you know, when you look at it, there's so many subtle ways that are the like ideas and myths that we tell as a culture about these like frontier values of self-reliance and, you know, overcoming nature and manifest destiny and all these things that are really tied up with, you know, how Americans have like conceived of our national identity. You know, those things are really interesting, and there's a lot of kind of dark undercurrents there, as well as a lot of things that many people, you know, love and can relate to. And so I just had been thinking for years that was kind of a rich and interesting field of exploration for my ceramic work. And then it was really when I went out to Montana, when I got to be a summer resident at the Archie Bray Foundation in Helena. I did a 3,000-mile road trip threw everything in the back of my pickup truck and drove in the sweltering summer heat with no air conditioning all the way out across the Great Plains, sleeping in my truck bed and taking breaks to hike around the Badlands and look for rattlesnakes and stop at roadside country bars and things like that. And then spending a summer out, in Big Sky country and going to the rodeo and country dancing at night after the fair and spending a few months like really getting to see some of that true Western culture as an adult. That really kind of got the gears turning in my mind, and thinking about the way that Western wear is such a unique expression of identity in many different ways. And there's all these interesting contradictions and paradoxes, being at a rodeo and seeing these very macho guys with, real tight ass jeans and kind of like colorful floral shirts and big shiny belt buckles and a lot of kind of flamboyant elements of dress just got me thinking about how much some of these subcultures that develop within our society create their own rules and exceptions, and how each of them has a lot of really interesting history that kind of leads up to what we see in something like Western wear.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I can see you driving across the country. I grew up in the prairies, which is very similar to Montana, and so I can relate to no air conditioning. I'm old enough to do that. And the windows down and the wind blowing in your face to keep some cool on, right? So I can see that, and I guess I can also relate how that would be a bit different for you, and therefore an opportunity for you to really start to think about how people were being in their lives, right?
I mean, I have been so fortunate as an artist to have many opportunities to travel to different places. Really, early in my career, I did a summer residency in college in Hungary, and then shortly after graduating, I spent a month doing a residency in Turkey and visiting friends in Istanbul, and I've been to the Caribbean and Southeast Asia, and had experiences doing both research and making at residencies and art centers in different parts of the world. And in each place that I've gone, whether it be Indonesia or Montana, I always see something that creates some kind of new mental connection for me between my own history and experiences and identity and some new element of human culture or the ways that people exist in the world or interact with materials or craft processes. There's always something new there that's exciting to me that ends up coming back and showing up in my work in some way or another, sometimes more overt and sometimes less so. But that's just one of the wonderful things about being an artist, right? Is that if we're if we're smart and careful about how we navigate all of these different things in our world, there's just an endless variety of inspiration and it's also just a way of thinking about and perceiving and making sense of our like dizzyingly complex world, being able to make art about it.
And it is true, when we get out there and see other parts of the world, I'm thinking about Turkey because I was just there, and so how that's the other parts of the world are so different than we are in North America, and we feel like we're different in Canada than you in the US. Like we're all different, right? And you've got a very broad interest level, I guess, in culture and clothing and animals and natural history and so on. How do you focus? Like to me, I would be worried that I would be too scattered because I can be scattered at the best of times. But how do you focus? How do you bring that together into an ideal for yourself?
That's a good question. One thing that I think is helpful for me is something you mentioned earlier, which is just patience,
Ah, yes.
because it often I often spend, a year or more, sometimes many years, with just kind of these seeds of an idea or kind of loose connections or associations that I have in the back of my mind, and that I kind of like build on and develop until I feel I have enough of a sense of what I want to say about that thing or something that some concrete way that I think I could address it through, one of my artworks. So once I start on a project, I focus is not a problem for me because I'm not a multitasking type of person. I want to be able to, although I have many different interests, I want to be able to put all of my mental and physical energy into one thing until I, bring it to completion, whatever that may be. And so I just, give myself the time to really work out an idea and decide that it's something that I and have enough interest in, enough passion to see me through the project. And then when I launch in, that's all I want to do.
So
And then, after that, I move on to something else.
So I can see you being patient with the materials. Like that's what I was thinking of when I mentioned patience. But you're also very patient about ideas and being able to pull and hold on to an idea maybe over here and an idea over here and see how they weave together. No pun intended. How do you keep track of those ideas? Do you write all this stuff down? Like, what's your method for doing that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do write a lot. Well, whenever I, sometimes during the process and sometimes after I finish each new work that I make, I usually write some kind of formal artist statement about that specific piece that kind of describes some more of my idea and story behind that. But in the development sense and just in my normal life, I also write and take notes in kind of a less formal way. I always have a variety of different notes on my smartphone that I will pull up and just kind of jot down, thoughts or lists of ideas that kind of relate to a certain theme. That I keep going, and I also am a big collector of images. So I, create folders on my computer, and whenever I encounter something in the internet that's of visual interest to me, I will save those things and kind of compile them into different areas.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Areas or themes of, you know, images that have relationships. And I, whenever I travel, I like to do sketches and take photographs and, you know, use those to help incorporate the things I get to see firsthand. Because ideally, you know, I would love to be able to experience everything firsthand. But although I'm not a hugely passionate about digital technology, it is really valuable to me as, you know, someone who loves, you know, visual research and, you know, written text. Like getting access to so much at my fingertips really helps me with that background work in, you know, developing my ideas and planning for new pieces.
Yeah. It is pretty good to, pretty great to actually have a lot of that technical stuff at our fingertips, as long as maybe it doesn't overtake us.
You know what? In libraries, is we're kind of in a way, it's kind of a golden age of libraries. And it's a little bit sad, but so few people are using physical libraries nowadays. You know, most of them have they've like removed the limits on how many books you can check out, and there's no late fees anymore because they want to incentivize people taking them. And so I also just love getting huge stacks of books and you know pouring through you know, physical texts and beautiful print photographs and stuff. And you know, that's wonderful. So more people need to get back out there and look at real books. It's a great thing too.
Absolutely. Hey, I wonder if we could switch a little bit and talk a bit about technical stuff. Like you have a very technical process.
Oh yeah, I'm a total technique nerd. Let's talk technical. That's fun for me.
Okay, well, fire away. Well, tell us a little bit about your work with tiny little pieces. Like, how thin do you make your work? What kind of clay do you like to use? How are you drilling individual four little holes in each tile?
Sometimes six, sometimes more. Okay, yeah, a lot of good stuff there. To start off with, I guess clay. Sorry, my dog's barking in the background there. But each piece that I make is an opportunity for me to try out new things. And I love experimenting with different clay bodies, different tile making techniques, different ways of glazing and doing surface treatments, different firing temperatures. So I've done a lot of different stuff, and so it's hard to generalize I do everything this way. But I, you know, it's most in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, the things that I have done the most, I can talk about that. I usually in my studio I only have an electric kiln, and so I usually am working with like a mid-range porcelain or white stoneware firing to cone 5 or 6, usually using smooth clay rather than something groggy. And I have done some work with different colored clay bodies. In the piece that I made called A Swimsuit to Wear While Looking for Hellbenders, I started with a black stoneware clay, you know, really rich in iron and manganese, and a super, super pure porcelain with a, you know, New Zealand kaolin base, super white on. And I actually blended those two clays together, just wedging incremental amounts of those two, you know, disparate clay bodies to create a color gradient between the two. And so, you know, I have fun experimenting with, you know, clay bodies, both for their, you know, tactile and technical qualities, and they're also the visual effects. For the tile making techniques that I enjoy the most and that I've done the most, I'd say more than anything else, I make tiles in kind of the most rudimentary way imaginable, which is just taking a small amount of clay and rolling out a really thin slab, and then letting it set up to about leather hard consistency, and then either using templates or just careful measurements and rulers, drawing out the tiles on the surface and cutting them apart with an X-Acto knife. So the way that I use clay as compared to someone who's doing wheel thrown pottery, for example, it's much more, I don't have like a lot of wet clay flying around my studio, I'm working with small amounts of clay and doing most of the manipulation when it's at a fairly firm consistency. So, as I mentioned before, it's a lot of careful cutting with X-Acto knives and things like that, using it almost like you would cardboard or something, or leather. So when I'm rolling out tiles to use for one of my garment pieces, I will usually I'll like stack two metal rulers on top of each other and use those as like a thickness guide for rolling my slabs. So I don't know exactly what that ends up being, but
Very thin, very thin.
less than an eighth of an inch is ideal when I'm making smaller tiles, because I want to keep my pieces as lightweight as possible to make them comfortable so that I can wear them, for an extended period of time, several hours, and potentially be doing things like hiking through the forest or wading in a river or riding on a horse, because that end goal, that short, wonderful time when I get to actually experience wearing the finished garment, that is for me so much of the satisfaction and joy that I get from the whole process. So another thing that I love to do is to make tiles with press molds. So when I'm doing that, I will, if I'm making something more elaborate, like say a hexagonal tile that has a little raised relief design on it, what I've done before is used plasticine or something like that that doesn't dry out, and I'll sculpt 10 or 20 identical little tiles and then stick those all down to a melamine board and create a big plaster gang mold with the impressions of those tiles. And then I can just press porcelain, a little tiny little nub at a time, and press out sets of 10 or 20 at a time of consistent size and shaped tiles with that relief motif in them. So that's something fun too. I love using plaster and doing mold making, although I do it usually in kind of a simpler way than people that are making molds of, a teapot or something like that. A lot of open face molds and things
And
are really effective.
you'd probably also have to use small amounts of clay, because I can imagine that at that thin, it's drying out very quickly. And so,
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm never, if I need to make 1,000 tiles, I'm not cutting a big chunk off of a 25-pound block of clay or taking a big wad out of a bucket that I've mixed. I'll usually just take about, a small handful of clay and make maybe if I'm rolling out tiles, I maybe roll out about a 6 by 8 inch slab, or maybe at most a 12 by 12 inch slab, and then just cut up as many tiles as that makes. And then because there's a specific moment, I through years of experimentation, I now drill all the holes for my tiles by hand by just spinning a little drill bit through the clay while it's kind of at a stiff leather hard state.
Spinning with your fingers?
I have I have one of those little tools that's just a wooden handle with a drill bit embedded in the end, and I just use that to make all my holes. My mom gave me that tool. She used to do pottery in the garage when I was a little kid, and when she stopped, she and I had started doing clay, she like gave me a box of all her old tools. I've been using that same little tool all these years, and it gets the job done. But I experimented with things like fully firing the tiles and then setting up a like a Dremel tool with a diamond bit clamped to a drill press with a water drip, and drilling the vitrified tiles. I've done a variety of different techniques, and what I've discovered is that the best way for me is just to make the holes when the tiles are leather hard. But
Sim
like you said,
keep it
they dry
simple.
out fast. Yep, keep it simple. I love trying new things, but sometimes, or very often, in fact, I end up going back to kind of what are actually really simple processes. People sometimes look at my work and they're like, "Oh my God, how do you do that? It looks really complicated." I'm like, "Yeah, in aggregate, it's a complex piece, but each individual step really requires more patience and attention to detail than it does mastery of complex techniques."
As we've been talking, I have this image of my mother making clothes. And of course, my mother and my mother-in-law and women of that, many women of that era made their own clothes. And have you connected with people who are making clothes with fabric and aligning what you're doing with what they're doing?
Yeah, a little bit. More and more over the years, I have developed my skill and experience with textiles, because my formal training was primarily in ceramics, and in college I was always trying to take electives in the textiles department and not getting into them. So I've spent some time in my adult life kind of learning more about textiles and pattern drafting and clothing construction, which has really reinforced my ceramic practice and my understanding and interest in clothing. So I also now have made a lot of the clothes that I wear in normal life, and I also incorporate fiber and textile materials into some of my garments quite a lot nowadays. When I first started out with this body of work, it was really important to me to try to use only ceramic tile and string for lacing it, so that I could create these pieces that were as much ceramic as possible. But after doing a number of pieces that way and enjoying that and kind of like proving to myself that I could work in that way, I also just love textiles, and I love different fiber materials and the feeling of working with worsted wool and things like that. And so in some of my recent outfits, like the Rhinestone Rattlesnake Boy suit, or in my A Waistcoat of Earthly Delights is one that I made that has kind of a wool structure under the tiles. I incorporate that more, and so I've never collaborated with textile artists or tailors or people that work in traditional clothing, but I know a lot of people that sew clothes and design clothes, and I'm very, very interested in that world.
Yeah, I can imagine you going into a tailor and wanting to collaborate with a tailor, and you're bringing in clay and how that might just blow their mind. So, yeah, that would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, collaborating is sometimes hard for me. I'm very fortunate. My partner Annie is an amazing artist. She's a furniture maker and has a lot of shared interests in like using hard and soft materials together and things like that. So I have collaborated with her a few times, but not with many other people. Very controlling in my studio practice, possibly to my own detriment at times. But it is always great to try to get outside of your comfort zone and navigate working with another person. So something I plan to try to do more of.
I get both of it. Like I understand the desire to collaborate because I think that can really open up our creativity in lots of ways. And yet at the same time, I understand your notion of, you called it controlling, but being able to manage the workspace and do it in the way that you want to do it. So, you know, that I get that completely. Hey, I wondered if you could describe for us a challenge that you've had in your work and how you overcame that challenge. What pops into mind when I ask that question?
Sure. Yeah. Actually, the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that is early in my career, I felt that I had a challenge with presenting my ceramic garments in a way that gave viewers the kind of experience of them that I wanted them to have. So I get I'll elaborate on that a little bit. You know, as a kid fresh out of college, making these very labor intensive tile garments, you know, I might work on something for a year and then, you know, just have one piece. So my work would usually be end up getting displayed in some kind of group show at a ceramic art center or something like that, and oftentimes it would be alongside vases and also you know, hand-built figure sculpture and these a variety of different works that all had ceramic as a common material, but very little you know, conceptual or thematic connection outside of that. And so I definitely got the sense that people would walk past my pieces and say, like, oh, a shirt made out of clay, that's weird and wacky, and then just move right on, you know, kind of a bizarre one-liner. And that was so different from the way that I was conceiving of my work and, you know, my experience of researching and planning and making it. And so it took time, but over the years I started doing a few things that helped me you know, take a little bit more control of the viewer's experience and also just provide some more of that kind of background of research and content and my, you know, various esoteric interests that I kind of like personally trying to imbue my work with. So starting to do these more specific and elaborate photo shoots with me wearing the pieces in different environments to kind of reinforce a narrative, that has been a big thing for me that's helped me overcome that. And then also I've always written about my work, but kind of bringing that to the forefront and displaying my pieces in the gallery with written statements and also publishing written statements along with my pieces on my website or social media. That writing practice and incorporating it more visibly with the work has also been helpful, I think.
Yeah, I know with art, art doesn't, the art piece itself and the experience that people have doesn't end when we pull it out of the kiln or when we put it on the plinth or when you wear it, right?
Yeah.
How do you have a method to help the reader, the observer, the person who's experiencing your piece connect with the story that you're interested in having them connect with?
Well, I don't know exactly. I maybe have gotten better at it over the years, but it's still something that, you know, probably all artists are constantly working to get better at. But you know, I hope that viewers who are not, you know, artists themselves are able to connect with my work on a few different levels. One, because I, you know, have roots and allegiance to, you know, the history and theory of craft and craft materials. One, you know, great strength of working with those materials and processes that is that Things like ceramic and textile are things that we touch in our daily lives, often more than any other materials. Like you can just reach down right now and feel the fabric of your shirt, and you can imagine you're, touching a tile countertop or bathroom floor or your favorite coffee mug. And so, although I'm doing very different things with those materials, there's some degree of material understanding that I hope can translate to a wider audience. And then I also, in my writing, I try to write in a way that is as clear and approachable as possible, so that I don't, alienate people with unnecessarily elevated diction. And I also try to, whenever possible, incorporate a little an element of humor or satire at times, to help people engage with the things that I'm interested in. So yeah, there's a variety of different strategies that I've tried out, and more most recently, actually wearing some of my pieces in the gallery and talking to people, kind of taking them off guard and letting them, touch my outfit and feel the actual things that I've made, and engage with them on a tactile level. And that has been a really great thing as well.
I can only imagine how inspiring that would be for people and for you too, because really these days, we don't want to touch somebody. Like we're so worried about touching somebody that we're offending them or hurting them or whatnot. And you're in a gallery inviting people, strangers, to come over and touch your body and your work. I mean, that would be
Yeah,
wild.
I
That would be
mean,
wild.
human connection is such an important thing, and it's just a big struggle for the whole world, especially
Totally.
since the COVID pandemic. In our lives, I feel like I have lost a lot of the things that I used to take for granted, like a lot of the artist talks and lectures that I do nowadays are conducted through Zoom on the internet, which is a wonderful thing. You can reach more people, but the experience of getting to go and talk to people face to face for me is I'm more comfortable. It's such a different experience. And like a lot of gallery openings, happen in faraway cities where you don't get to be there and actually talk to your audience about the work that you've made. Anyway, any chance that I get to interact with viewers and the people that are interested in my artwork or encountering it for the first time, I'll always jump on that opportunity because, I put myself into my work, to a great degree, as all artists do, to some extent. And so, getting to directly interface with other human beings is great for me. And as you can tell, I'm a talker. I'm a person who loves to, open up and just, spill out the things that I think and feel about my work. So.
Yeah, that's great. I can really relate. I really like texture on the stuff that I make. And so I've thought recently it would be really cool to have people blindfolded or somehow limit their sensory connections and just touch the work and see what kind of reactions people have with that. And so
Yeah.
I might play around with that, but it's in the same vein as we're talking
Yeah,
about.
no, that's a great idea. I actually what last year I was showing some work at the Kohler Art Center in Wisconsin, and the curators of that show did a great thing where they had a little area in the center of the gallery space. There were four artists exhibiting in four corners of this, enormous exhibition space. And in the middle, there was a little area where each person submitted to the show something that the public could touch and feel, and that had some kind of tactile quality. And so I had some samples of my laced together tiles and things like that that were on the pedestal that people could come up and interact with, even if they couldn't go up and like climb onto the plinth and touch the things in the installation. So yeah.
It's very cool. Hey Shay, thanks so much for being with us today. This has been fascinating, and you're right, the Zoom kind of experience like we're having right now is limiting because there's only so much we can talk about, and I have a million questions. So it would be great to have dinner with you or chat with you more about lots of your ideas. So I really appreciate you being here to be able to share your story with our listeners and audience.
Thank you so much, Bob. If I'm up in Canada, I'll definitely hunt you down, although I hear it's a big place.
Yes, it is a big place, but I would love to be hunted down and connect. That would be a lot of fun.
Likewise, if you're ever in the American South, I can always drive and meet up with you somewhere.
Sounds great. Hey, thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing more of your great work.
Thank you very much too, Bob. Thanks for giving me this chance to talk about what I do.
You bet.
Thank you.